Well, welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you're thinking about stuttering one podcast at a time. This is episode 272 for April 17th, 2011, and you're here with the B team, Joel.
Hey.
And Karen Herring.
Hey, guys.
And me, Reverse Sheen. We are on this beautiful spring-like day going to bring in the show by paying a little homage to the co-founder and former co-host of the Stutter Talk, Eric Jackson. Him and Peter built a pretty amazing resource and community for people who stutter. And Eric recently moved on from the show. And I think that we all have our personal stories about how he affected us. So we're just going to quickly share those. Who wants to go first, guys?
I'll go. Yeah, I was thinking about this a little bit, and Stutter Talk has been really important for me personally because I started listening to it right when I started to make the decision that I wanted to work on my stuttering, and at the time I was in a really bad place with my stuttering, so it was just really, really cool for me to be able to hear other people talk about stuttering. And I remember going on a long road trip. Actually, it wasn't really long. I was going up to see my grandma. It was like a 4-hour drive, and I burned a few episodes onto CD, and I remember just thinking it was such a cool thing they were doing. I remember it would make me a little bit mad though, because they would laugh so much, and I didn't think it was very funny. That time of my life, awesome. I didn't think stuttering was very funny. But what was really cool is, and I, you know, I already kind of knew who Eric was, but then he was the intern at the intensive program I went to at the American Institute for Stuttering. And gosh, it was just mind blowing to meet him, because for one, I'd really never met anybody who stuttered. I mean, there was a handful here and there, but I just never even imagined that you could actually be a successful, cool person that was a great communicator, stuttering in the way that he stuttered. And it was just, it just opened up a whole nother world to me without us even really having a conversation. Just seeing him live his life pretty much. And one thing that was kind of funny, I thought, is part of the program at AIS is that there's a fluency shaping component. And when I was first learning this treatment approach, I was pretty enamored with it, and I thought it was really going to be the way that I was going to be managing my stuttering. And I loved Eric and I respected him so much, but at the time I was just so confused, because a lot of times he would be the one that would be demonstrating the fluency shaping, and he would do it so, you know, it would sound pretty natural and he wouldn't stutter at all. And I was just wondering, I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? Why doesn't he do this all the time? I mean, I obviously can. It's, you know, he's so good at it. I didn't understand the intricacies of this whole stuttering thing and trying to manage it and stuff. But I remember it was really interesting for me, because I just respected the hell out of him, and I learned so much from him just by setting an example. But at the time, it was very, very confusing for me. But I could go on and on. But yeah, I'll wrap it up there.
Okay, cool. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I'll go next.
Yeah.
I met Eric. Well, I guess I listened to his show, the Stutter Talk show, for a while before I met Eric. And when I actually met Eric in person and got to know him, he was really the first person I had ever met who stuttered openly and was so confident about himself while stuttering openly. And I was in a point of my life where I didn't really know how I felt about my speech. And I was still trying really hard to use fluency shaping speech tools. And while I was more okay with the fact that I stuttered, I still didn't want to be. And Eric was really such a role model for me. Just hearing him talk and be such an effective communicator while stuttering. And I feel like knowing him and hearing him on Stutter Talk and hanging out with him really played a huge role in where I am today. So I thank him for all of those stuffs, and I think Stutter Talk's really going to miss him a lot.
Hmm.
Roshi, you don't even know Eric.
How dead should I go here?
Wait, have you and Eric ever met? No.
So I have a pretty similar story to what you guys have, which is really interesting. That the only thing is that I actually met Eric before I knew that Stutter Talk existed. I met him at an NSA group in Brooklyn, a support group that he was in charge of, and it was the first support group I've ever been to. I hadn't really done therapy yet. I hadn't really even begun to explore my feelings about stuttering. I just knew that I was basically drowning. So I went to the support group, and like you both said, he was the first person I had ever met who openly stuttered and refused to apologize for it, both verbally and with body language and with attitude. He just refused to apologize for his stuttering. And that completely blew my mind and really scared me when I first met him. I was just like, who is this guy? I'm like, well, what is he even really talking about? and he invited me on the radio show or the podcast. And I didn't really know what it was. I didn't really understand, but I was just like, I can't talk, so I can't go on a radio show. Like, this is insane.
Oh, Roshin.
I mean, at the time, I was really, really struggling and felt speaking for me was this insurmountable task that was just so, especially speaking where everyone's attention would be on me, was just something that was so at that moment in my life, I was I really can't do that. But of course, when he asked me, I was like, yeah, sure, that'd be totally fine. And then went home and freaked out for days. But and so I went on the show, and it was both him and Peter seemed so interested in what I had to say and so interested in my story and wanting to connect me with other people who stuttered and were telling these people that I should talk to. And it was just this huge, it was a huge change in the direction of my life. And a lot of things happened in the year after that. I went to AIS. I started doing weekly therapy. I got more involved in self-help. I met more people who stuttered. but I still would like hold on to meeting Eric and sort of being introduced to the community that Saratok had created as the moment where like my life changed. So that's like a, like I couldn't thank Eric enough. Now, well, it's a little more complicated now because he's like my best friend now. So I'm not going to be like, he's my role model, but like he definitely played a huge role in that.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, should we take a quick break and come back and talk about some stuff that's come up over the last month?
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
Rashida, I just learned so much about you that I didn't know.
Really? Cool.
Yeah, I feel like when I met you, you were already, like, I got the impression that you were so cool with your stuttering.
You know, I kind of felt that way, too.
This is, God, I just learned so much about
the
you.
The really strange thing is that, like, well, I can't really remember when I met you guys. It's probably about, like, what was it after I did AIS?
Probably.
I saw you on YouTube, you know, Stutter Talk YouTube before I met you, though, so I kind of knew you a little bit.
So that was that first show where I was, like, freaking out.
Well, see, that's what... I agree with you, Karen. When I saw those videos, it just seemed like a person that was, you know, overtly stuttering, but was just, you know, just doing your thing.
Yeah, I guess I never really heard your... story, Roisin. That was neat.
Well, but it's funny because when Eric and I first started like dating and getting closer, we would talk about, like, I talked about, like, when I first met him, all this stuff, and he was like, wait, like, you were afraid of stuttering? And I was like, dude, I was like struggling. Like it was all I thought about. I was afraid of speaking. Like, and he was like, I didn't really get that impression. I feel like when I first met them, when I went to Stutter Talk, like immediately in that room, I like tried to probably subconsciously like be like them. Because
mm-hmm.
like they were giving me eye contact and they were just speaking, and I was like, I have to like be like them to be here. So I kind of just like pretended to be really confident.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting now when I look back at some of those earlier videos when I was on, because I was so, I really, really just didn't want to stutter. I was freaked out about the idea of being on YouTube stuttering in front of people, and now it's like I would feel weird if I was on there and I wasn't stuttering.
Mm.
I was re-listening to the first episode I was on with my mom and my dad not that long ago, and it was actually hard for me to sit through. Like,
really?
Back at that point, I had so much, like, tension, and I just put myself in that place, and it was, like, so hard for me to hear myself having such a hard time and trying to push so hard through these blocks.
But
it was awful.
Aren't you like kind of proud of yourself though? Because you were, I mean, you were working on it, and you were in a tough place.
Yeah, it was just nuts to hear. It's actually pretty cool to have like an audio of where I was then.
All right, so for the listeners, we've just been talking, and I think we were all under the impression it was during the break time, but I think we should just keep all that stuff in.
Yeah, that should be on the show, I think.
Okay. All right.
I think it's interesting trying to track my progress, you know, like over the past years, like progress in terms of accepting stuttering or, you know, actually like speaking with more ease.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird because with stuttering, as we all know, there's like times when you really feel like you like move forward, then fall back, and then move forward, and then fall back, as opposed to just progressively moving forward.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm not really sure what I'm trying to say, but it's just interesting because it's like I think it's clear that all three of us have come really far in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
But then I definitely, on this show with other people that I'm talking, I'm just like, the past 6 months, I've like totally fallen back. And it's just interesting.
Yeah.
To think about that.
That kind of happened to me today, actually. All right, yeah, this is a good segue into what I wanted to talk about. I've been trying to work on my stuttering a lot lately, and we should probably get on that whole voluntary stuttering kick again that we all fell off of.
Yeah, I really would like to. I was in such a good place when we were doing that.
All right.
And since we stopped, it's gone. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll talk more about that. But I have two clients this semester who stutter because I'm doing an internal practicum at the University of Minnesota. So we've been working on some stuff and been working on prolongations and a little bit of pausing with one of them. And I've been in turn thinking, whoa, I should probably do this stuff that I'm telling them to do. So I've been on kind of a prolongations kick. I'm probably going to try to work on it a little bit right now. And it's been what I feel like it's been really helpful for me in controlling some of the stuttering that I'm experiencing, where I'm kind of reducing my rate a little bit and not hitting the block so hard. And so I've been feeling pretty good about myself. And a real interesting thing happened last week where I was ordering food, and I don't really get anxious or nervous at all anymore, but I usually stutter quite frequently when I'm calling to place a takeout order. And I had just gotten done with a session where we were like really, you know, we were doing conversation, but really working on prolongations. And the way that I usually always stutter on my name is that it's a pretty hard repetition. So it sounds something like Joel. And I just really consciously tried to change it to make it like a smooth, long prolongation. So it would sound more like Joel. And when I did it on the phone, it actually ended up to be much shorter than I initially planned because for whatever reason, I don't know, that happens sometimes. But so it came out, the guy asked me what my name is, and I just go, Joel. And I was like, what the heck? I'm like, something just happened, you know? Like, I stuttered in a different way, but it was so, the prolongation was so subtle that, I'm sure the person didn't perceive it as stuttering, and it didn't really sound like stuttering, and I thought that was really cool, and I was pretty excited about it. It hasn't happened since, but
I think it's so interesting how excited we can get, mm-hmm, when the speech tools that we're consciously using actually work.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, no, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just think that's like really funny to think about. Like, I mean, if we're consciously using the tools, I mean, you would hope that they would work, but it does. Like, I'm shocked too every time that they actually help.
Yeah, and like for me, it's like kind of an ego thing where I've kind of always, or at least for the past couple of years, I've been like, oh, speech tools are stupid. They don't help. Like, you know, whatever. They just something speech therapists to think they're supposed to tell people to do. But then it's like once I get over that pride thing and actually really try to just change the way that I'm talking a little bit, it does seem, obviously this stuff's been around for like 60 years or something. And obviously there's a reason that it has been, right?
I would hope so.
Yeah. So it's cool, but then at the same time, there's always that part of me that is a little bit self-defeating where I'm like, you know, this stuff really isn't that complicated. Even though, I mean, the speech tools, the physical tools aren't that complicated, but I think what's really complicated is all emotional baggage that goes into being a person who stutters and having to deal with it all the time. Like, that's where everything gets really complicated. But I guess it's interesting that I'm kind of allowing this stuff to happen and some allowing some changes in my overt speech. Hmm. Although it's not all rainbows and butterflies, because I have another story I wanted to share. Living in the moment with the light upon your face, I'll look up and show the motions I'll use. I can hear breathing, I feel the space, and so, you know, I've been feeling pretty good about stuff lately. You know, things at work have been going good, and with my clients, and I feel like I'm in pretty decent control. And this just happened today, and it's no big deal or anything, but it's just weird. I did yoga with a friend, and then my friend and I met my girlfriend Kelly out for lunch, and this... And my friend, his name's Graham, he's from New York. He had a friend that had come... This is getting really confusing. Okay, so my friend Graham invited a person from Minneapolis that I don't really know to lunch. So I've never really spoken with her before. And so it was me and Kelly and Graham and this person. And... it was crazy. Like, I mean, I didn't really think about if it was going to be tough for me or if I should use any strategies or anything like that. I was just, you know, trying to add to the conversation and ask questions like I normally do. But I was experiencing lots of stuttering and lots of tension, like pretty much stuttering on every word with like pretty tough tension. And it's like once it's like that, it's like it's just hard for me to like get back on track. Like I don't even know what to do, because then like I'll maybe try to do a prolongation or something, but it just kind of like leads into another stutter, and then I'm like kind of doing this weird breathing stuff, and it's just wild how, you know, you think you're in pretty good shape and you're communicating or reasonably effectively, and then all of a sudden it's like, geez, like, you know, and then consequently this woman's a really nice person, but I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts?
I mean, I can totally relate.
Yeah.
Sorry about Roisin.
No, it's okay. I can like totally relate to that feeling of like once it gets past a certain point and you've lost a certain amount of control, like, how do you center yourself? Because I feel like when that happens to me, like, usually at work when that happens, where there's, like, one situation or like, a couple of hours where, like, I just feel like I've completely lost control of my speaking, where, like, my body is just, like, in such high, like, I don't even know how to explain it, but I'm functioning in this very high stress, like quickly breathing physiological situation. And I feel like the only way for me to move beyond it is like to like just let it be and then like restart either when work ends or like when that situation ends. Then kind of we group. And I feel like that's not a very good solution, but I don't know how to like rein in my like body and like my breathing and everything.
When you say that you regroup, like what is it that you do?
I think that's part of the problem that like I don't really do anything. I can just sort of like calm down and like leave the situation and then like feel like it's done.
Okay.
And since I'm not attaching so much shame to stuttering now, it doesn't like unless like it's a really terrible situation, it doesn't like really like trail with me. So it doesn't like affect me later on. I can move on and be fine and like calm, and then like gain a little more control and just feel a little more centered when I'm speaking. But like, I feel like there has to be a better way for me in that moment to be able to like rein in everything. But I feel like it's really hard, and it's not, I don't know, it's so hard.
No, that's completely my experience that you just described, where that's kind of what I do too, is now, you know, since it's over, I think, well, I think I can communicate better than that, you know, and I'll try to regroup, I guess. But like in the moment of when I just feel like I have no control, I don't understand why it's so hard to get back to a place where you're feeling good about your speaking.
Wait, yeah. I want to reiterate what you just said, Joel.
Yeah.
Oh crap! Now I forget. crap. You said that I can communicate better than that.
Yeah.
What the heck does that mean?
Well, okay. I'll give you an example of what I sounded like a couple hours ago. What can be something I can talk about?
Well, are you saying you couldn't communicate effectively because you were stuttering a lot?
It just took me forever to say anything, and it was really a struggle. Like I was making like weird breathing noises and and like gurgling sounds and stuff. And it was unpleasant for me, kind of. It should be easier than that. It should be how it is right now when I'm talking to you guys.
Yeah.
But it was like black and white. It wasn't even like in between. There wasn't a gray area. It was just like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't that bad, but it just felt.
It felt bad.
It felt like it was really tough to communicate. Like it was exerting a lot of effort, physically and mentally, really.
How is your eye contact?
See, that was good. That was totally intact. And that's what I was talking to Kelly about, because I was like, you know, like the core things that I feel like I can, for whatever reason, I feel like I can control all the time, is that maintain good natural eye contact no matter how long the duration of the block is, and then to say what I want to say. Like to get to like the basic, you know, important things about communication, I feel like we're still there, but it was basically the struggle that was tough for me. And I might not have been speaking as much as I would have liked to. I'm not sure, because I think I probably was, but yeah, to answer your question, Roisin, the basic things were intact, I think.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Karen? I know you're thinking stuff. I want to hear what you have to say.
I don't know. I'm trying to think what I think makes up a good, effective communicator. And I don't know if I believe that just because your breathing was off or your stuttering was really hard or a lot that... I mean, I do think if you weren't saying everything you wanted to say, like you sort of hinted at the end there.
Yeah.
And I think that might have been making you a less effective communicator.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you can still be an effective communicator even if you make gurgly noises when you talk.
Okay, let me rephrase it. I agree with you, but I know that for whatever reason... it doesn't have to be that effort for me right now today. A couple years ago, if I was talking like that and that was like my baseline normal way that I was talking, that's fine because I'm happy in that moment talking in that way. But I feel like right now when I've been experiencing more control and, I feel like I have a little better handle on my emotions when I'm talking, and I'm accustomed to speaking in a certain manner and with, you know, a minimal amount of effort. Then all of a sudden when, you know, it's completely different, it's frustrating.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So that's, it's also not... like how stuttering always is, right? Like Roisin was saying before, you take one step forward and six steps back.
Yeah.
It's like, why is this thing so, like, why are we so neurologically sensitive? But like, yeah. How could it be that, like, it can be so variable?
Yeah.
You know, and then we can like walk out of situation, like, okay, it's like we're out of the situation, and then like things can be okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's even like stranger that we can like, that we can sort of recover from these moments of like really intense struggle, and like 3 hours later be speaking with a lot more ease. Like, yeah. It's strange, you know?
I feel like I'm sort of going through the same things that you're going through, Joel.
Yeah.
Like a few weeks ago on the show, I was saying how I was concerned because I wasn't stuttering enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having all of this spontaneous fluency. And that sort of did like a 180.
Really?
And since I've been at the school, I feel like I've been stuttering more than I ever have.
Wow.
And it's not in control. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a lot of, like, uncontrolled hard blocks or, yeah.
Okay.
It's just been, like, a mess.
Well, okay, so now I can sit in a therapist chair.
Yeah.
Where you was like, well, Joel, what's wrong with that? What, you know, why does that make you feel bad, Karen?
I really hope that's not how I came across.
I
didn't mean to make it sound like you don't have the rights to feel the way you do, because I can completely relate.
Okay. So, why do you think that's happening? I'm just laughing as I ask.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't either.
I really wish that when I did have that spontaneous fluency kick, that I had voluntarily stuttered more.
Yeah.
Because I think when I fell off of that, I fell hard.
Yeah.
Like, it was just
a high horse frequency.
Yeah, it was so great for that period of time just to, like, not think about stuttering at all and really not stutter much.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I got to this new school, it was just like, holy smokes.
Sorry, Karen.
No, go ahead. What?
Isn't that, like, so sort of... I don't want to say satisfying, but like when I, like, probably for the past like 4 months or so, I've been stuttering more than I was for the past year. And when it first happened, I was like shocked at how much I had forgotten what it felt like to think about stuttering in like a personal way, yeah. not in like this political stutter talk way, you know, like to struggle with it. I, like, forgot what that was like, and I was like, oh, like, I'm kind of, like, getting back in touch with, like, this really important part of me.
You're crazy.
Which is, like, struggling.
I know what you mean, though. That's so important, because I never want to forget how it feels to be completely, you feel like you don't have any options, like, you're completely out of control, and it's just that despair that mm-hmm. just, like, and... Once life starts getting better and stuttering is not such a central part, it's crazy how it is easy to forget about it. But then what's crazier is how quick it comes back when you when you start experiencing that again.
So true. I was just going to kind of bring up, like Joel was saying, and you both, and Karen was questioning, and you both were talking about how, like, How did Joel know that even though he was struggling, he wasn't being an effective communicator? And like, I used to talk a lot about, not a lot, but I remember one situation at the Friends conference. There was a bunch of parents in the room, And it was Lee and like all the parents in the conference and Taro and me. I think Eric was there. And all the parents were talking about how what it meant to be an effective communicator. And me, Taro, and Eric were having in the background, and they were all talking, and they were saying that that to be effective communicator, you can't be struggling. So we have to. The point was that we have to help these kids get into speech therapy to help them struggle less.
What?
Well, no, it's not saying that's all we have to do, but a part of supporting these kids is giving them the self-help and like the acceptance and the fact that like they can meet people stuttering, it's okay to stutter, but also helping them speak with more ease to help them become more effective communicators. And I remember like raising my hand and being like, it doesn't, the definition of stuttering is struggling. Or in my opinion, like it's like if the stuttering is happening, you're usually struggling. And this is at a time when I was really struggling with my speech, so I like thought, and I was like, so to say that someone can't be effective while they're struggling is like really just nixing any possibility of a stutterer, a moderate, or just any stutterer of being an effective communicator, because speaking is a struggle.
I'm confused why they think that.
Well, they were just I was confused too, and I remember thinking like you guys are missing a really central piece of what stuttering is, mm-hmm. and that it's not just disfluencies. Like what stuttering is like a struggle, and you can effectively communicate while stuttering, but it doesn't mean you're not going to be struggling. And I'm not saying the opposite now, but recently I've been feeling or just questioning, like, if someone is really struggling and they don't feel like it's almost where that they can't feel present in the moment because they're struggling, are they effectively communicating? Even if the person that they're talking to thinks they are, like, are they actually effectively communicating what they're trying to say because they're, or for me, it's like when I'm really struggling, it's kind of hard to remain present.
Yeah.
So like, are we actually effectively communicating?
See, that's the thing. It's like today I was preoccupied by my struggle. So I couldn't enjoy the communication that was taking place. Cause I was like, what is going on? You know? So when someone else was talking, I was busy thinking about why it was so hard for me.
Right.
You know, and that it does that's a barrier to communication.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, we have to deal with things like that.
Yeah.
In that sense, I don't know if it's like the stuttering or the severity of the stuttering that's affecting how you communicate, but it's kind of what you do to deal with how you feel about that. Like if you're going to change your words or not say something, obviously that can affect the effectiveness of how you communicate. Or if you're struggling so much that you sort of black out what's going on, mm-hmm. obviously that can affect things.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if just stuttering a whole lot or having a lot of tension when you do stutter, I don't think that in itself can really make you a less effective communicator.
I agree with you if the person who is speaking isn't worried about the level of tension and struggle.
Right.
Because then they're not, you know, spending all these brain resources getting irritated about it. But right. for someone else who, you know, is clearly emotionally distressed by the amount of struggle going on, I think that it does. So I think it kind of depends on the state of the person in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I would say that I'm not trying to say that if someone is struggling a lot, then the person listening to them isn't effectively getting their message. But I feel like once we get beyond the fears of what the other person is thinking, you know,
mm-hmm.
and once we accept that, of course, we can effectively get a message across to someone while struggling. I feel like a huge part of communication is like, or a huge part of effective communication is like comfortably, I'm not sure if you have to enjoy communication to be an effective communicator, but I think that's probably a big part of it.
Yeah.
And like, No, it's okay. So I'm not saying that people who stutter a lot, or when I'm stuttering a lot, that people around me don't get the message or don't respect me, but I feel like I'm kind of missing out on a really important part of communication.
In the situation that you were talking about, when you sort of felt like you weren't as effective as you could have been, were you concerned about what the other people thought? Like, is that what sort of egged that on?
You know what? I think I was. I mean, it bums me out to admit it, because I thought I was a little bit past that. But yeah, I was thinking about what this woman was thinking about me, because it kind of goes back to that whole thing where, I don't know, you know, you just, I felt like she was perceiving that, you know, I had a significant problem, you know, and it was just kind of bothering me, and it was totally, who knows if she was thinking that or not, and it probably doesn't really matter, but it was on my mind, yeah. Which is a shame. Do you guys think about what people think sometimes, eh?
Eh?
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm from Minnesota, so I gotta, you know, throw some of that in there.
That was great.
Amazing.
Yeah, I think I do. I think I do sometimes. And I think that it's really hard, kind of like what you were just saying. I agree with you that, like, sometimes the hardest part is not that this person thinks, like, oh, like, right now Rasheen is stuttering a lot and it's, like, crazy. But the person would think, especially if they don't really know me, like, this person, like, this is sad how much she's struggling.
Exactly.
And, like, it sucks to feel, I don't want to say stigmatized, because they're not stigmatizing you, but, like, it just sucks to feel like this person thinks that, like, you're not okay.
Yeah, and it's like you want them to know who the real you is, and you want them to know that life is good, and you have a good job, and you love your girlfriend, and, like, you know, and, like, and she likes you, or she loves you.
Right.
She's actually in here right now. She's watching a movie, though, with headphones, so she's not listening. What was I? Oh, yeah, I mean, you don't want them to think that you're this person that, you know, lives this lonely life.
Right.
I've kind of had an interesting twist on all this since I've been in the schools. I don't know if it's, like, the student-teacher, like, rules or respect level that the kids are sort of have for this teachers. But I've had one kid laugh at my speech, but every other kid almost, like, they know that they're not allowed to laugh at the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like no matter what I do or say, like, they don't show that they think it's odd.
Hmm.
So I sort of learned, I don't really care as much as what the kids think anymore, because apparently they aren't allowed to care, or they just actually don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I think kids usually just don't care.
Yeah, I don't know. But my supervisor is always in the room when I'm doing the therapy with the kids, and I feel like I'm constantly concerned what she thinks of my speech.
Yeah.
Even though she's been extremely nice, and she hasn't done or said anything that would make me think that she's not okay with my speech. But it's always like, especially because I've been stuttering so much and my blocks have been so hard, like, every time I get stuck, like, my first reaction is like, what did she think of that?
Yeah.
Even though she's not even the one that I'm communicating with.
Mm-hmm.
Which is new for me, to be concerned about someone who's not even in the conversation.
Yeah. I totally know what you're saying there. Yeah, it's really kind of a strange thing, because you're right. I mean, she isn't the person that you're directly talking to, but she is an important person that's watching you, and you know, you want to perform well, and for a person who stutters, anytime you run into a block, it's just like, oh, you know, that was something that made me have to stop talking for a while.
Yeah.
But the fact that she never actually said anything, like, to make me think that she cares, I mean, I'm putting these thoughts sort of in her mouth.
Yeah.
And obviously the thoughts came from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like I'm indirectly thinking that myself,
mm-hmm.
which is concerning to me.
You know, what's funny is, like, my supervisor is, like, the main stuttering person. And mm-hmm. I even think that sometimes, Karen, even though I know it's really ridiculous. So I just think it's maybe more of a human thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, we assume that when our performance matters to a person, like someone supervising us, that they're automatically going to be a lot more critical mm-hmm. of us.
You know, I bet voluntary stuttering would help again. Karen, I've had my supervisor tell me it made me really happy that she can't tell a lot of the time if I'm really stuttering or voluntary stuttering. Mm-hmm. That just kind of made me happy, because it's like, you know, it's like, you know, she doesn't know what I'm up to, you know?
Yeah. Joel.
You know? It's like, well, I mean, you could, there's not a ton of formal research that says voluntary stuttering is a good thing to do, but yeah, there is. I mean, there's not. Well, I remember going to an ASHA conference a couple years ago, and someone was doing a presentation on voluntary stuttering, and one of the reasons that they had done this research is because they said, you know, there's not a ton of voluntary stuttering related research out there, and with all the emphasis on evidence-based practice, it's important that there's evidence for using this outrageously helpful thing, you know, yeah. that everybody knows, or most people know, is helpful. But I don't know. I think it's just kind of a nice buffer to have, where if anybody ever did care if you were stuttering too much, you could always just say, well, I'm stuttering on purpose, and that there's evidence to support that this is a helpful thing for me to do.
Friends and gave more of yourself to them. I've been noticing that when I'm voluntary stuttering, and I realize that I do this a lot when I voluntary stutter, and when I am using it, I don't use it, like, if I'm using it in a conversation, I don't use it very frequently. Like, using it twice in 10 minutes for me is, like, really effective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, yeah.
And, like, when I do use it, I, like, feel myself, like, I use it, and then I'm, like, I look out of the corner of my eye at someone, and, like, I'm, like, they know. Like, I'm, like, oh, they know that was fake. And, like, of course, no. And like, with Eric, I do it, too. It's funny when I do it around him, because I assume that he knows, but obviously he doesn't.
Uh-huh.
I'll do it and be, like, he must have known that was fake. And then, like, well, and I'll be, like, oh, my God. It just, like, interesting. That was not really important, but I just like saying it.
I love it.
So we should start voluntary stuttering again, you guys. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joel, I sent you a text last week, and I didn't ever get a text.
I know. I actually rude. Was thinking about that this week. I'm like, I never responded to it.
Very, very rude.
I know, it was, wasn't it? It was really,
guys,
really rough.
Fort Worth. It's
I can't wait. I'm excited.
Me too.
Oh, then my internship at AIS starts that Monday.
Oh, that's incredible.
So it's going to be like a stuttering few months.
Plus you're moving in with me, so I'll be stuttering all the time.
Yay!
So you guys are going to be doing shows together?
Yeah,
okay, we're trying to figure out how that's going to work.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to feel
not
so
sure.
Left
I'm
out.
We're going to sit in our separate rooms and talk in our computers.
No, I think we should do it in the same room.
Yeah, sure, and like look at each other and have really good eye contact.
Yeah. And then we can like pass notes during the show.
About Joel.
What the heck did Joel just say?
Okay, yeah. So is the show still going right now?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Unless you guys have anything else you want to add.
Not really.
Okay. All right.
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, you guys have been listening to Stutter Talk with the B Team, and you can contact us at stuttertalk@stuttertalk.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail at 206-666-5340, or you can also write on the Stutter Talk Facebook page, and we can get you that way.
Yeah. Oh, and quickly before we leave, I just wanted to give a big thank you to Natalie Reagan, who was on the had a show with Peter several episodes again, and she gave a lot of love to the B Team. And
she really did. That was so sweet.
It made me feel really good.
Same.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Natalie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
Sounds good. All right. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.